Jesus was definitely a person of wisdom. And part of that wisdom had to do, I think, with Jesus' ability to not think in kind of a dualistic way. In other words, Jesus was not someone who saw the world in either ors. It was either this or it was that. But Jesus was someone who was much more able to see the world in terms of a both this and that. That things could be both together, be part of a whole. Jesus spoke in ways that seemed paradoxical at times. You know, the first shall be last, the last shall be first. In order to live, you must die. Those things sound like contradictions. But for Jesus, they were kind of a part of a whole. And Jesus in his life would often respond to people, respond to situations where there was that imbalance. And he would try to bring about a balance. And in some ways, he was probably like you and me. You know, when something is so imbalanced, you can respond to it so strongly to change it back. You know, you do this as a parent. You know, your child does something, you say, if you do that again, I'm going to, you know. And you may not want to do that. You may get arrested for it. I mean, it is so dramatic what you want. You know, don't do that again. We try to get someone to go from here to here. We may come over here to kind of bring them over. Jesus does this. As an example, a few weeks ago, there was that wonderful gospel of the rich young man who comes to Jesus and wants to follow him. What must I do to follow him? And he had many things. And Jesus says, give away everything. Pretty dramatic. And the man walks away. I think it was something he had to think about. In our gospel reading today, I think we see something like that again. It says that Jesus and his disciples, they're leaving the temple. This is the temple in Jerusalem. A magnificent building. History tells us it was just a magnificent building. And it possibly was still being built at the time of Jesus. There was still some construction going on. Kind of like Carrie. Continuing to see building happening and occurring. And they're walking out of the temple, and one of the disciples, you know, says to Jesus, look at this building. You know, look at these stones. That's what's going on. Like, hey, look at this. And how does Jesus respond? In 3 days, I can destroy this. You know, and he starts going into this whole teaching about the call that they have and the end time and all these dramatic things. It's like the disciples could say to Jesus, jeez, sorry I brought it up. I mean, his reaction is so dramatic. You know, I could destroy this building. In other words, what I hear Jesus kind of saying to these disciples is, you know, don't be taken with that. But he's not criticizing the temple. I mean, Jesus is someone who grew in that tradition. His wisdom came from that place. It came from the Jewish tradition. He was shaped and formed and transformed and given life from that experience. So he values it. But he's kind of challenging his disciples, don't be taken with exteriors, but remember who we are. Remember what we're called to be. Remember what we're called to live into. And he challenges them to that. Rather dramatic response. Jesus was always trying to maintain or bring about that balance, that equilibrium when there was an imbalance. And I think sometimes in life we can get imbalanced. We can sometimes forget what we're about, forget what our focus is. I want to share with you a parable this morning. It's a parable, I'm told, it's about 40 or 50 years old. We don't know the source of it or who wrote this parable, where it comes from. But I want to share it with you this morning and then talk a little bit about it. It's called The Parable of the Life-Saving Station. The Parable of the Life-Saving Station. Let me read this to you. On a dangerous seacoast, where shipwrecks often occur, there was once a crude little life-saving station. The building was just a hut. And there was only one boat. But the devoted members kept a constant watch over the sea, and with no thought for themselves, went out day and night, tirelessly searching for the lost. Some of those who were saved, and various others in the surrounding area, wanted to become associated with the station, and gave of their time and money and effort for the support of its work. New boats were bought and new crews trained. The little life-saving station grew. Some of the members of the life-saving station were unhappy that the building was so crude and poorly equipped. They felt that a more comfortable place should be provided as the first refuge of those saved from the sea. They replaced the emergency cots with beds and put better furniture in the enlarged building. Now the life-saving station became a popular gathering place for its members, and they decorated it beautifully because they used it as a sort of a club. Fewer members were now interested in going to sea on life-saving missions, so they hired lifeboat crews to do this work. The life-saving motif still prevailed in the club's decorations, and there was a liturgical lifeboat in the room where the club's initiations were held. About this time, a large ship wrecked off the coast, and the hired crews brought in boatloads of cold, wet, and half-drowned people. They were dirty, and they were sick. The beautiful new club was in chaos, so the property committee immediately had a shower house built outside the club where victims of shipwrecks could be cleaned up before coming inside. At the next meeting, there was a split among the club membership. Most of the members wanted to stop the club's life-saving activities as being unpleasant and a hindrance to the normal social life of the club. Some members insisted upon life-saving as their primary purpose and pointed out that they were still called a life-saving station. But they were finally voted down and told that if they wanted to save lives of all the various kinds of people who were shipwrecked in those waters, they could begin their own life-saving station. So they did. As the years went by, the new station experienced the same changes that had occurred in the old. It evolved into a club, and yet another life-saving station was founded. History continued to repeat itself. And if you visit that seacoast today, you will find a number of exclusive clubs along that shore. Shipwrecks are frequent in those waters, but most of the people drown. It's a powerful story, isn't it? I'll talk a little bit about that. Although I hesitate, you know, to try to talk about or explain a parable is like trying to explain a joke. You know, you tell a joke, you either get the joke or you don't get the joke. But it's when I first heard this, it was really a reflection that someone was offering on how any group of people, how any really good-hearted group of people, an organization, an institution, can sort of lose a sense of itself, lose a sense of the focus of what it was called to. And many people where I heard this were talking about different organizations that they're a part of and how they can forget and how you need to be reminded of what we're about and what our lives are about. Of course, I'm hearing this story and I'm thinking about in our own faith community here at St. Paul's. It struck me when I heard the gospel reading today about the disciples saying, "Boy, look at these stones, look at these buildings." You know, we've done so much over the last few years. We're blessed with these beautiful buildings that we have given of our time and our energy and our effort and our money to build. And remember, we built this building based on a vision, based on a dream. And when we moved into this building in 2004, I remember sharing the idea that now the building stands before us as an invitation to live into that vision, live into that dream. I think here at St. Paul's, we continue to do that. Sometimes, you know, some churches can fall into what's sometimes referred to as an edifice complex. You can fall into a self-maintenance and the building becomes your entire life. While this building is a blessing to us and a responsibility to us, it's also a place and a community that reaches out beyond itself, tests new waters, tries to be a resource to our community and beyond. And we live into that in many various ways. I mean, in a couple of weeks is St. Nicholas Day, and the tags are on the tree. At least there's some left to take and to bring gifts that would be distributed to the community beyond ourselves. I'm very impressed by the work that's being done exploring a counseling ministry here in our parish. It'll be a service to the community. Work that's being done very carefully, very precisely, very prayerfully, and very thoughtfully, just thinking out what a counseling ministry could be to our community and beyond. Those kinds of examples of looking beyond ourselves is also a part of who we are as a community of faith. And I think we at St. Paul's continue to live into that. And we continue to learn what that means, as any group does. And I hope we get a sense of that in our lives. Because we are a community that needs to gather and needs to be sent forth. We are a community that needs fellowship, needs to nourish and nurture and care for each other so that we can go out, be sent forth. And if we're sent forth without the ability to be nourished and fed, it can become empty and difficult and frustrating. And yet if all we do is gather and sort of make ourselves feel good, we miss the call that we have to go beyond ourselves. And it's in that balance, as I often say, of gathering and being sent forth, of gathering and being sent forth. That, to me, is the rhythm of our life together. And one is not more important than the other. But in that sense of the wisdom that Jesus has, they're both important to each other, both important for all of us to share. There are some of us in the faith community here that their gifts are to the gathered community. There are some within our parish community where their gifts are to the community sent forth. But it's together we need each other to live into this. And so I present that parable today to you as one that really makes you think about how groups and people can sometimes forget who we're called to be. The life-saving station forgot that they were really called to life-saving. And I hope we never find ourselves falling into that. We continue to live into the wonder that we are here at St. Paul's. The gift that this building is, but more importantly, the gift that you are, as this community of St. Paul's, continuing to go forth and gather together. Let us give thanks this day for the wisdom of Jesus and the life that we're called to live as the St. Paul's faith community.